Can't you see it? The world running on EVs and renewable energy? Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy
in a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Houston, they put a TD on the board. They lead it 7-6. They get the ball back late in quarter number two at home at NRG Stadium in Houston. Looks like a lovely day down there. And they're trying to get in a field goal position. And C.J. Stroud may do that. It's been a defensive struggle. Chargers led 6-0 early, a couple of field goals. Houston playing much better late in the half. And they have Justin Herbert and that Charger offense bottled up today at NRG Stadium. And this is another example of why, as a rule, I don't gamble on sports.
That is, ethics?
Well, not even so much ethics.
Okay, so no ethics.
It's just, it's so hard because going into the weekend, I felt like the Chargers were the one lock that I could point to. All the other games, I felt like, because Houston's had, in my opinion, a pretty mediocre year. C.J. Stroud was great a year ago. I just really thought that the Chargers were flying high, playing well, that they would go in and have no problem today. And now it looks like the Texans will have an opportunity to go up 10-6 at the half. So, yeah, it was just one of those. This league is so hard to predict.
The it's Chargers like were a lock to you?
I really felt like that. Of all the games this weekend, I felt like they had, of all the road teams, of all the games, I felt strongest about the Chargers. Jim Harbaugh is a good coach. They had a really nice year. And Houston has just kind of had one of those years where, they've never really impressed me at any given moment this season.
And they've lost a lot of talent in their receiver corps as well. Let's not forget that Stephon Diggs was on that team. He got hurt. Yeah. Tank Dell is having, like, reconstructive knee surgery, basically. Yeah. And that's the reason why I'm a little apprehensive on the Texans. But the Chargers are only, you know, a few months removed from Brandon Staley, okay? I know Jim Harbaugh is football Jesus to everybody, but I think that it's going to take more than one season for him to turn that team into the machine that it could be. And at the end of the day, it is the Chargers. And so they do find ways to shoot themselves in the foot. That's the team that blew, was it a 27-point lead to the Jacksonville Jaguars a couple of playoff seasons ago and kind of anointed the Jags as the next team coming. I'm even starting to wonder about Justin Herbert. I don't wonder about the talent. I really don't. That's not the question. But there's tons of talented players in this league, but not everybody is able to string it together and figure it out. And in the biggest moments, it just seems like he hasn't been able to get it done yet.
Well, I'm glad you brought up the Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence, because I jumped on that bandwagon. It's like, this team has arrived. I mean, they've got a quarterback. They've got all the ingredients. And then it turned out to be, it's the Jags. All right, so late in the half, Houston has a chance with a long field goal try here. Even a reasonable 41-yarder to go up 10-7 at the half. Right now we're going to bring in Kevin Lynch from FanDuel Sports Network, talk Timberwolves. Kev, how you been?
I'm doing pretty well, Steve. How are you doing?
Good. You've got to be thrilled. The Australian Open getting set to start. Oh, you can stay up late. You can stay up all night and watch tennis from down under if you want.
No, I know. I'd love to. I'm glad you brought that up, because I love, you know, in mid-January when that tournament starts, it's blistering cold here in the tundra. Right. And so I get to look at a place where the sun is shining and it's 90 degrees and people are playing tennis, and I just think, man, I want to be there.
Yeah, and people are just sitting in the stands sweating. They always talk about the heat down under for the Australian Open. And it is one of those. I'd like to go to any of the Grand Slams, go to New York for the U.S. Open at the end of the year, Wimbledon, Paris, the French Open. I don't know if I have that long a flight in me. I don't know if you've ever been to the Far East or New Zealand or Australia. I don't know if I could do that. That time you and I were on a plane to the Great Alaska Shootout in Anchorage, I was kind of like, all right, I'm ready to get there. I've had enough. And that's only 6 hours to Anchorage. I just can't imagine being on a plane for 12, 14 hours or whatever it takes.
Yeah, you know the good thing about all these international flights and planes is you have – so if you like to watch movies, as you know, they have all these built-in TVs in the seat in front of you so you can watch movies, you can read a book. So that's – it's just hard to – you know, you're a bigger guy like me. It's, like, hard to stretch your legs, and that's uncomfortable. But the suffering, to go – you know, so I've been to the U.S. – I was at the U.S. Open, Steve, in New York the first year that in 1990 when Pete Sampras won it. And then I was, I went to Wimbledon. So my whole goal is to get to all the Grand Slams. So I've been to the U.S. Open that summer and I went to Wimbledon in 2014. And so I got to get to the French in May. And then of course the Australian in January. So it's just a matter of time, my friend. I'm going to be at all four.
Yeah, that is a great goal in great venues. I don't know if I've ever asked you about this. What was it like at the All England Club? Because it's very exclusive. And, of course, just regular folk can go during Wimbledon. It had to be a phenomenal experience to be on the grounds.
You know, it was. It was amazing. And it's actually, like, before I made it there that summer, that was 10 years ago, I was told that you better get organized before you go because and have, you know, somehow a way to get tickets because it's actually one of the toughest sporting events to get tickets to because unlike the U.S. Open, the Australian Open, and the French, it's a smaller private club. So it's not like these huge, like you go to the U.S. Open in Flushing Meadows. It's just an enormous facility and, you know, hundreds of thousands of people can get in there, but the Wimbledon is different than the other three because it's smaller venue. It doesn't hold as many people and it's a private club. So, but you can get tickets. You got a queue or wait in line. They call, you got to get there like at 3 a.m. right outside the facility and you get in line and get in that way, but you can't get into the main courts that way. You can get on the grounds and watch tennis, but so anyways, when I went there, I was pretty organized and got a pass from Eric Buderak from Rochester, Minnesota. He was playing on the tour in doubles, and I got connected to Eric, and he got me a pass to get into, like, the main courts. And so it was great. It was phenomenal. You get a chance to go to one of those tournaments, Steve, let me know because I'll go with you.
Yeah, I would love to check it out. Another one on my list, and that is to get to Augusta National for the Masters in the spring. And that's another notoriously tough ticket. And I've been on that online, and every year I kind of sign up and go, okay, maybe this is a year, and then I get the reject email and says, all right, buddy, maybe next year. And I know you can get tickets to get into the venue on the secondary market. I've got to get down there and see that because it's one of those things as I get older and I'm having a little bit more knee trouble and so on and so forth. I've heard it's a very hilly course and that it is a tough walk if you do have some mobility issues. So that's another one that I would love to get, you know, in a very exclusive club, et cetera. And, you know, hard to get on the grounds and hard to get tickets, but I'd love to check that out. So
would that be number one on your list? Would be to watch the Masters more so than like a Super Bowl or anything else? Would be the Masters?
Yeah, I went to the Super Bowl when it was here, the Eagles and the Patriots at U.S. Bank Stadium, and here's the thing about the Super Bowl: it's a hassle to get in the building, is what I noticed. All the checkpoints, all the security, et cetera. And then when you get in there, it's in reality another football game. You know, there's a lot of timeouts, a lot of standing around. It was kind of cool to see him set up the halftime show for Justin Timberlake. I mean, it was good to be there, but it's still another. I think in this case, as you talked about going to one of the Grand Slams, about being in seeing the venue like Rod Laver Stadium down under, or going to center court at Wimbledon or Roland Garros and see him play on the clay or Art Thrash Stadium at the U.S. Open. I think the venue that you've seen so many times on TV, where, you know, Super Bowls are played in stadiums you see all the time, and it's kind of like, yeah, it's like any other football stadium. So, yeah, the Masters would probably be number one. One of the Slams would be certainly in my top 10 for sure.
Yeah, you know, in the Australian Open, that's kind of considered with the players. That's kind of, they call it the fun slam. You know, it's like Australia, they do a great job of, you know, because you don't get a ton of sporting events. It's such a out of the ordinary place to go for top athletes. You know, you get so far for pretty much everybody to travel to get down to Australia. But once you get down there, Melbourne and the whole city and the whole country, everything shuts down for that tournament, and they put on a great show. So, yeah, I can't wait to get to that tournament, because it's just it's such a good time once you get down there, and the summer weather, and it's so. Anyways, one of these days.
Kev, let's talk a little Timberwolves. They get the Grizzlies tonight at Target Center, and the Timberwolves have shown some signs in what's been a roller coaster ride of the year as they try and figure things out. The one change I wanted to get your thoughts on, Dante DiVincenzo has moved into the starting lineup, Mike Conley to the bench. Your thoughts on that move by Chris Finch and the Timberwolves?
Yeah, good move. Something had to happen. They were getting off to such poor starts to start games. The whole thing last year with Towns, and you could say, you know, their offense, you know, wasn't great last year, but it was middle of the road. And people say, well, why isn't it working this year as opposed to last year? It's because Edwards was phenomenal last year, and Karl Anthony Towns was Edwards' equal last year. You had two really good offensive players, two of the best offensive players in the NBA, and because you have that, two guys that are that talented offensively could kind of help carry the other three starters and get off to better starts last year than they did this year. You know, Julius Randle is a good offensive player, but he's not Towns. And they just were two slow starters. They didn't have enough weapons to begin games. So it was either going to be you put DiVincenzo in there for Mike Conley, or you start thinking about putting somebody else in there for Jaden McDaniels with how he has struggled. So they decided to go get Conley to the bench, DiVincenzo more of a shooter scorer, more of a threat. So now I would assume moving forward, this is going to continue to work, Steve, because, you know, DiVincenzo is a good shooter. He's an aggressive guy. He can score. He has more variety to his offensive game than Conley does. I think that's really going to help. At the same time, it's going to hurt your bench. You're not going to have as much punch off the bench without DiVincenzo coming off it. But something had to happen. And Chris Finch, in my opinion, made a good choice.
Yeah, and with Mike Conley, he is the type of player, and his reputation is throughout his career, and now at this late stage of his career, that I would assume he's super comfortable with that role. He's still a calming influence and has been very important to this team turning the corner, not only a year ago, but I still think is a key cog in making this thing work.
Well, maybe that's kind of, we're at the point now, I think, in his career where, you know, he's, what, 37?
Yeah.
He's played, whatever, 17, 18 years or whatever it's been. And I would imagine he'll get to 20 years as long as he stays healthy. But those last few years are going to be backup point guard, you know, mentor to a young guy like Dillingham. And he's going to be, he's so mature and he's such a smart guy that, man, he's going to be great at that role. It was bound to happen. And I mean, we'll see how the rest of this season plays out. But if Finch keeps it like this, where Conley's coming off the bench, he's not going to cause any problems. He'll be just fine. So that's why I think this can work, and I think Finch is going to stay with this now.
Yeah, Timberwolves and Grizzlies, and the Grizz, for really as long as I can remember, you know, they have put together in Memphis a really good run of competitive teams. They've had some really nice players. Once upon a time, Mike Conley played for the Memphis Grizzlies. Yeah. This is a good team coming in tonight.
Yeah, and I'm actually kind of looking forward to seeing Zach Edey, the big guy from Purdue, 7'4" guy. I'm really concerned about the NBA in one way, Steve, is teams are going so small and you're getting away from, you know, everybody wants to shoot threes, and you and I have talked about this many times, in my opinion, too many threes, and you're getting away too much of the big guys dominating inside because you just want to shoot threes all the time. And I'm glad Memphis took the big guy from Purdue, Edey, and he's gotten off to, you know, he's starting for him, and he's playing pretty well. The numbers aren't great yet, but I hope he really develops into a good big man. And to watch him in college, then to see how he's starting his NBA career is encouraging. So, and then, you know, John Morant is doing his thing. Desmond Bain's a good player. Jared Jackson Jr. So they got weapons. So I'm not surprised they're, third or fourth in the West right now.
Well, Kev, always good to visit with you, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you, Steve. Appreciate
it. There he is, Kevin Lynch, FanDuel Sports Network, Timberwolves analyst on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Quick break. We'll come back a whole lot more, a bit on the terrible fires in the L.A. area. It's just unbelievable. We'll get into that in a moment here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. The fires in the L.A. area are just hard to describe. It is, and they continue, and there is concerns about Santa Ana winds coming back into the area as crews try to tamp down the fires that are there. But the latest word is that this will be the most expensive fire disaster in U.S. history, certainly in California history. And already, the damage and economic losses so far between $135 and $150 billion. And, of course, AccuWeather estimated the damage and economic losses caused by Hurricane Helene, which tore across the southeast last fall, at $225 to $250 billion. Mm. And it is the tragedy is just hard to explain. Entire neighborhoods just wiped out by fire. And forget, you know, the celebrities and the multi-million-dollar homes. We're talking about, you know, average folks too, and their livelihoods and homes wiped out by all of this. And the one thing I hate, and I don't know about you, Lindsay, in all of this, that it's still way too early for the finger pointing, and it's going on in Southern California. It's going on all over about making this a political thing in a blame game. It is still way, way too early for that. There'll be plenty of time to play the blame game. And I was in for Henry on Thursday night, and I visited with this about Chris, or with Chris Tubbs. Way too early for the blame game. We're still in put out the fires, help folks recover, and then maybe let's have after action analysis in the blame game.
Yeah. Yeah, I think blame game is a really easy to play strategy to play, especially when you're trying to really avoid grappling with the feelings of what we're experiencing right now, too. Because it's one natural disaster at another. And these are very complex conversations that, as you said, Steve, are meant for a different time. But I'm having trouble just even thinking about one family and them not just losing their house, but maybe that's a house that's been in their family for generations. What if they had to fight for that house? And what if their entire family history is in that house, in that attic? And that's just one of thousands and thousands and thousands. And then what's really got to me, and I think where most of my donations have been centralized in, is about the animals and the amount of animals, not just the wild animals, but animals that are in shelters or people that run from their house. They don't have time to go get their animals. It's just, it's such a scale of loss that's just kind of incomprehensible. And we're going to need to really think and comprehend just what is needed, because I think this is going to be a different level of rebuild than we've seen in this country probably since even, like, I don't even, would you even say, like, New Deal-esque type of not legislation, but imagination is needed, because this is one of the biggest economic drivers in the world. And it's gone.
If California was a standalone economy, I still think it would be a top five economy in the world. And that just goes to show. But I still get back to, if we could just stop for now the political bickering and whose fault it is and what budgets were cut and what priorities and so on and so forth, there is plenty of time for that. And for folks that are interested, we have coverage on the Odyssey app. We have ways to donate at the Odyssey app. We have ways you can help at the Odyssey app if you so choose, or on our website, WCCRadio.com. And each and every hour, we bring you updates on the latest from the L.A. area. But I talked to golf writer Ron Cyrak, who's won awards from the PGA Tour and LPGA Tour, and he's based in Massachusetts. And I reached him earlier in the day, and he's out in L.A. Helping his daughter and their family dealing with the fires. And he's expected to return to Massachusetts next Tuesday. And I hope to have him on next week. He just didn't have time today for obvious reasons to visit with us. But what I was able to glean is that it is overwhelming. And you see the video, you see the photos, you hear the reports. And there's a lot of Minnesotans who now live in that area. Mm-hmm. Just crazy. So there are ways you can help. The Red Cross, however you choose, a lot of good options to help out the victims of the ongoing fires in the greater L.A. area. It is 5:32. Quick break. We'll come back. We'll have a complete update on our weather. Snow on the way to the cities. More as you head north. Winter storm warning for the Arrowhead. Winter advisory. Brainerd, Duluth. All the way up to the Canadian border. We'll have more on that in a moment here on News Talk 830-WCCO. At the moment, light snow, 26 degrees here in the Twin Cities metro area, and we expect snow overnight tonight. 1 to 2, the way it looks here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul. Some spots, especially north metro, could get a little more, maybe 3. But once again, snow tonight, overnight, and it should wind down before noon on Sunday, but the temps will fall into the teens through the day. So right now, as warm as it's going to get for a while. Sunday night, partly cloudy, low near 2 below. Monday, sunny and cold, high of 5. Monday night, 6 below. Tuesday, sunny, high near 7 above. Wednesday night, minus 3. And then on Wednesday, a warm-up, sunny 26. Thursday, sunny 36. Friday, partly sunny, 34. Next Saturday, cold again, partly sunny, and a high near 15. But snow on the way. And if you look north of the cities, there is a winter weather advisory in effect. And to give you an idea, this runs includes areas Fargo, Moorhead, Brainerd, Hinckley, Hayward, Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and then Duluth, Hibbing, Bemidji, all the way up to the Canadian border. And then the Arrowhead under a winter storm warning, and they're going to get even more snow up there. But here in the cities, 1 or 2, maybe 3, depending on where you're at, before it's all over. Once again, here in the Twin Cities of Minneapolis, St. Paul, we're hanging in there at 26 degrees here at News Talk, 830-WCCO. First game of wild card weekend, a defensive struggle. Chargers, Texans. Chargers got 2 field goals early, and then it's been donut for them. The Texans took a 10-6 lead at the half. They're now in the third quarter, and Houston leading 10-6. This Texans D today has been really, really good tonight, Steelers and Ravens. Then the triple header tomorrow in the NFL. Here's the lay of the land on Sunday. In the noon game, Broncos-Bills, that'll be on CBS. And then I believe Fox has the Packers-Eagles, that's at 3:30. And then NBC on Sunday Night Football, Commanders-Bucks. And then, of course, Monday night on ABC, it is the Vikings and the Rams from Glendale, Arizona. And the Vikes favored by 2.5 in that game on Monday night. But right now, Texans-Chargers, 10-6. That game midway through the third quarter. Lindsey Brown is our producer. And Lindsey, I've been impressed all day by this Texans defense. They look really good. I mean, they have not allowed the Chargers anything.
Yeah, and I wonder why. I wonder if it has anything to do with the addition of Danielle Hunter, who was my favorite on the favorite player in the Vikings until he decided to leave. So that's okay, because he wanted to get paid a lot more money than this team was probably willing to shed out at this point. But in terms of being a mentor, being somebody that they can pair with young Will Anderson Jr., who was a very, very invested in player that they've – was he a top three pick? Top five for sure, wasn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and you're seeing that in terms of – I saw some graphic because I've kind of taken a hiatus from football, so I'm not really sure about all the deepest of dives, but it seemed like both of them had at least 10 sacks. And when you have two players on the edge like that, it's kind of pick your poison. And I did see somebody on Twitter put out that I think Danielle Hunter is adding about 12% to his pressure rate today, which is around like 20-something percent. He's in the 30s today. And so they're getting after Justin Herbert and making Joe Alt's life a little bit of a living hell in a way.
Yeah, and Joe Alt, really a good pick long-term 100%. For the Chargers, and has had a phenomenal year. I saw a number on him, and we'll get into this more tomorrow on the Huddle. By the way, a quick plug for the Huddle tomorrow, Pete Najarian, Dave Schwartz. Dave is out, so they
what
went to the bench.
What is he doing with his life?
I think it's a youth hockey thing, spending time with the kids.
Oh,
so they went to the bench. They pointed at me. Brad pointed down the bench at me. So I'll be on with Pete tomorrow, and we'll get into that. But, you know, he was, top 10 for sure. I don't know if he went top 5, Joe Alt.
He was top 5. I think he was 5th.
Yeah, maybe he was 5th right on the dot. But he had a phenomenal year this year for the Chargers. And once again, Jim Harbaugh, he seems kind of kooky, but he's won everywhere in his career, and he did get this team back to the playoffs, and I think there's a lot of good things coming for the LA Chargers if it isn't today. I really thought they were going to win the football game. I thought they were
still
heading
could
in
they're only down by 4 points, but
yeah, and it's midway through the quarter, but Texans are driving again, and they put a touchdown on the board here midway through the third. Mm. The way the Chargers have been stymied, it's going to be really difficult. But C.J. Stroud took a step back this year, but as you pointed out earlier in the show, there is an excuse. They lost a lot of weapons, and when you lose marquee skill positions, any team in the NFL is going to struggle.
Absolutely, absolutely. And just he's kind of the outlier that everybody likes to point to and when they're arguing for starting a quarterback early, like right out of the draft. He's the one that's had massive success. And I'm someone that likes to have them sit for a while. I'd rather it be at least 1 year. I think 4 is a little bit much, but those across the river to the east seem to have that down. So maybe that is the true way to really bring these guys in. But I also think that he's one that's very mature beyond his years. He doesn't seem like he's rattled very much. And I think it's just you're waiting for that perfect combination where you have this defense that they've been able to put together, and they've turned that thing around really well. I mean, we're only, 5 years removed from the Bill O'Brien saga when they and just all of the assets they hemorrhaged there. And so they're going to be a really sneaky, dangerous team and hopefully take some sort of supremacy in the AFC South, because that is kind of the equivalent of the NFC East, where it just seems like every year there's somebody else winning that division. And it's kind of the battle of who's the least amount of dysfunctional. And so the Houston Texans are certainly my pick. And I think C.J. Stroud just threw an interception right there. My goodness, it was just a return for a big, big gain going the other way by the Los Angeles Chargers. That will get the people going. That's how you get back into that game and maybe take the lead for a few minutes if you're the Chargers.
But it wasn't a terrible throw by Stroud.
That's 50-50 ball, and that's just good defense by that. I think either a cornerback or a safety, right?
Yeah, and by the way, James Jr. made one of the great picks you'll ever see in a spot. Not only did he pick what was a pretty good throw by Stroud, and you're right, 50-50 ball, but he made a great play on the ball, then popped up and returned the thing almost to midfield or very close to midfield. I mean, that was an absolute phenomenal interception. One of the best you'll ever see. So the Chargers down by 4, 10-6 that game midway through quarter number two. Once again, the nightcap Steelers-Ravens. Ravens favored by a big 9 in that one. I heard this thought. I was driving back. I was calling a high school game on a streaming service last night, NSPN.TV, High School Hoops, number one ranked 4A, Creighton-Durham Hall at Woodbury. Woodbury hung in there, and then Creighton-Durham Hall pulled away, and they're now 11-0 on the year. Big news in that game, Tommy Onneman got banged up. The big guy headed to Notre Dame. He got banged up, spent time on the bench, ice near the left knee. Now, once again, I'm not, you know, revealing anything I didn't see. That's what I saw calling the game last night. He had 2 points in limited minutes in the first half. But on the way home, kind of going up and down the dial, and I've done this for a long time, listening to distant AM radio, et cetera, and sports talk from around the country.
Sicko.
Someone jumped on. Yeah, just hardcore. Someone last night on the public airwaves said, and I don't know if I believe this, that Mike Tomlin's coaching for his job tonight.
Oh, my God.
If the Steelers get beat, he's out. I don't know if I believe that or not. I don't want to believe that.
No.
That Mike Tomlin would be out.
I believe that last year. I thought if there was a time to do it, it was last year with the failed Kenny Pickett experiment, right?
Yeah,
and then you have the George Pickens. But I think it's fascinating to me when wide receivers leave Pittsburgh and then go to other places and other people can't handle them. That says a lot about Mike Tomlin. And this is a guy that, as we all know, hasn't had a losing record in his entire tenure, and it's over 10 years long. And well, it's not a failed experiment if they lose with the Russell Wilson bid, is it? I really wasn't offended by it because he's been playing well for them for the most part.
Yeah, and, you know, to keep this team consistently competitive is extraordinary. But that was the take I heard. I don't know if I believe it. So, and then, of course, there's a Lamar Jackson storyline as well.
Yeah.
Can he get it done in the playoffs over the long haul? And if they beat the Steelers, I still don't think you can say, okay, Lamar Jackson's out of the woods. I think at some point he is going to need to play like an MVP in the playoffs.
He has to beat the Chiefs. That's what he has to do. He has to beat the Chiefs. Because they've won playoff games, but they went to the AFC championship game last year, and it really wasn't a contest.
Yeah.
And so they need to show up against the big guys. Yep.
That's the next step for him. All right, Vikes and Rams, Monday night, Glendale, Arizona. And we'll get back to what we brought up earlier in the show real quickly. Darnold plays well. They have a very good chance to win this football game. He has another bad game. He had a nice year, and we move into the offseason. I don't know if it's any more. You can throw in other things like turnovers, et cetera. The Rams are a talented team. They're in the playoffs. They deserve to be in the playoffs. But if Darnold plays well, I think the Vikings are the better team.
Yeah, I think
should win the game.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would think that from top to bottom, talent wise, but man, they're a quick strike underneath offense. That Puka Nacua and Matthew Stafford connection is not something that I really want to get lathered up. But that's the security blanket, right? And I don't even know, is Cooper Kupp playing? Is he injured again, or is he back in? I know it was a midseason entry.
I think he is available.
He's available, and that makes me nervous too.
Yeah, and that is a dynamic too on the outside. Now the Vikes have plenty of weapons as we as we all know.
Mm-hmm. But can Aaron Jones not go back to the locker? Like, can we keep the consistency for that rhythm that they're looking for on the offense? Like, does that mean there's more handoffs early on in series as well? Like, do they want to rely and kind of punch the LA front line in the mouth? They don't have Aaron Donald anymore, and these two coaches know each other very well, and so they're kind of everything's up in the air, Steve. It makes me nervous.
Yeah, for sure. I just think getting Darnold in rhythm and connecting on throws that an NFL quarterback needs to make is going to be a key thing to look for in that game on Monday night. All right, quick break. We'll come back. I promise some college football. We'll do some college football in a moment here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. Show's gone quick. Big thanks, Lindsey Brown, our producer. Thanks to Jess Myers joining us from the Pioneer Press. Wild on the road. They will be in San Jose late tonight. They'll be in Vegas tomorrow night. Return home to take on the Oilers Wednesday night at the Xcel Energy Center. Timberwolves home tonight. They get the Memphis Grizzlies. Kevin Lynch joining us from FanDuel Sports Network to talk Timberwolves. Little college football. The title game is set. And it'll be Ohio State against Notre Dame. And if you would have said that this first year, the 12-team playoff, that Ohio State would be in the title game, I'm not so sure about Notre Dame. That's a bit of a surprise. So it'll be the Buckeyes and the Irish for all the marbles coming up on January 20th, a week from Monday. But certainly a surprise development there. Ohio State, with that talent and some of the built-in advantages, they should be there every year. Light snow here in the Twin Cities, 1-3 overnight here in the cities, and then falling temps tomorrow as the snow tapers off. Sunday night, partly cloudy, 2 below. Monday, sunny, 5. Tuesday, sunny and 7. Warm up later in the week. We've got to run. We have all the news at 6. Have a great Saturday night. I'll be back for the huddle with Pete Najarian between 10 and noon. Matthew Collar, Purple Insider, among our guests. Be sure to tune in tomorrow here on CCO.